All right, good evening. It's nice to see such clean faces today for Lag BaOmer, especially on Zoom, seeing a lot of clean faces today. Some have shaved off their cameras right off. Very nice. Great to see such exuberant Lag BaOmer spirit going on over here. Every year I feel that once Lag BaOmer has arrived, and at this point already, I already counted, so I can say it's the 34th day of the Omer, it's when Shavuos really starts to feel close. You know, actually, thinking back, this is the time when Ahuva and I moved to West Hempstead. We started on Shavuos. We've gone through an entire cycle of year. Lag BaOmer was the last thing we hadn't experienced here yet. What an experience it's been. Actually, it was very nice last night at the community bonfire. That was very beautiful. And now it feels like we're marching close to Shavuos. Rav Hirsch, Rav Shamshon Rafael Hirsch, in last week's Parsha, has a beautiful idea that we don't call the holiday Matan Torah Day, or just Torah Day. Shavuos means weeks. The name of the holiday speaks to the preparation for the holiday. The preparation for Kabbalah Satorah is so integral to what the day is all about that the name of the holiday, the essence of the holiday, speaks about its preparatory period. Now, this time period, Shavuos, the weeks that we spend preparing ourselves for Kabbalah Satorah. And tonight's message, the two essays we're going to take a peek at that Rav Dessler wrote in different volumes of Miflam Eliyahu, actually going to have a particular message for Lag BaOmer itself in the larger context of Sfiras HaOmer. So let's... That wasn't it. Let's try that again. Here are our sources. Excellent. Okay, so the first essay tonight comes from volume 2 of Michtav Me'Eliyahu, 2 pages from that, and the final 2 pages are from volume 4. The first half will be, first two-thirds, will be about Sfiras HaOmer in general, and then we'll have a message for Lag BaOmer specifically, which, depending how you look at it, could either be very apropos, given that it was just Lag BaOmer, or very not apropos, given that it's 350-something days away until the next Lag BaOmer, but we can capitalize this moment to take the lesson. Rav Dessler has some beautiful thoughts about what it is we're supposed to be focusing on during these Shavuos, to prepare for Shavuos, to allow ourselves to be in the right mindset, preparing for Kabbalah Satorah. Rav Dessler discusses over here a well-known comment of the Zohar, that many of the Mefarshim discussed this comment of the Zohar, and that is the idea that Shavuos represents a day of a wedding between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael. You've heard this before? That Shavuos represents a wedding. The Zohar adds on that the idea that the 7 weeks preparing for Shavuos are the nation's version of counting Shiva Nikiyim. When a woman is looking forward to embracing her with her husband, she has to count 7 clean days. Technically, the Torah refers to this woman as a Zava. Classical terms nowadays is Nida. The Torah may make a distinction, but for all intents and purposes, we use the word Nida, the word Zava. It refers to a woman who is counting 7 clean days, doing checks, preparing for that wonderful intimate union between Chasan and Kala, which is renewed every month, and that is what Kal Yisrael are doing during these 7 weeks. And that's what Rav Dessler talks about over here. Sfiras HaOmer Mincha Chadasha, from Volume 2 of Michtav Me'Eliyahu. He writes, V'sfarim HaKadoshim, Ramzu al HaKesher Shebein Sefiras Zayin Shavuos Shel HaOmer. They make a connection in the special Holy Sfarim between the 7 weeks that we count at this time period, Ubein Sefiras Shiva Nekiyim Shel HaZava, that a woman counts 7 clean days in order to come together. This idea that Matan Torah is compared to a wedding is actually, according to the Rishonim already, the Maharam Rutenberg, Balei HaTosfos, they point out that all the customs at a wedding are really paralleled from what happened at Kabbalah Satorah. As I'll talk about the mountain being held over our head, maybe that was the chuppah. A little bit of a scary chuppah, but then again, all chuppahs are kind of scary. So the mountain over our heads was the chuppah. We have fire. Many walk down the aisle holding fire to represent the fire at Kabbalah Satorah. The flowers at the wedding, they're not just there to be expensive. There's a connection to Har Sinai and having flowers at a wedding, exchanging of gifts. Chasan and Kala, Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us the luchos, the exchanging of gifts. I think perhaps the best connection between what we do at weddings, what's a very common custom at weddings, dating back to Matan Torah, is that Chazal say when HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the Torah, he spoke in a loud, deafening, booming voice that actually took the neshamas of the people that had to be brought back to life again. And as we all know, weddings nowadays have music that's so loud, it's deafening, and it seems to kill us. We have to leave the room to come back to life again. Maybe the deafening music is a symbol of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's loud voice. There are so many connections way back to the Rishonim about the idea that a wedding parallels Kabbalah Satorah, because Kabbalah Satorah was a wedding, and therefore, just like we have to make ourselves clean and ready for the wedding between two people, the same thing is true of Am Yisrael. Am Yisrael is the bride of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and therefore every year we have to prepare ourselves. The Or Chaim writes that when it comes to individuals, 7 days is enough, and 7 weeks is the national version, it's the larger scale of what we have to do to prepare ourselves. The Or Chaim HaKadosh continues there in Parshas Emor, and that it's not a one-time thing. It was a one-time thing, Klal Yisrael prepared themselves for Kabbalah Satorah. It's that was built into nature for every year. Every year, as we re-enter this time period, it's a period for us to be able to clean ourselves, to introspect, and be able to perfect ourselves. That's what Rav Dessler is going to discuss right now in the second paragraph. There's something improper, there's something that prevents them from getting together. And there's a process for her to be able to be clean so that the couple can reunite. She needs 7 days of cleanliness. A very important idea. That even when someone is clean, you might ask, well, once she's no longer bleeding, once she's no longer emitting tuma, shouldn't that be enough? She's been clean already for a day, for 2 days, for 3 days. Isn't that enough? She's not currently bleeding. So why does she have to wait and count and check and continue doing more things? Why can't the couple get together? And the idea is that even if something is going well, someone is on a clean streak, someone has improved their behavior, someone is right to come close to the Shekhinah, as time goes on, it might get weakened. In order to be mechazik that, alkein misha mevakish letzeis mituma lekedusha, when a person really wants to turn around and wants to enhance and finalize and make permanent a sense of kedusha, tzarech lebekiros mimosheches umechupeles shivasayim. There has to be repeated and extra care given to make sure that they are in a proper state of mind, a proper state of cleanliness to be able to come together. V'zeu geder sfiras shivas hanekiyim. That's the idea of counting Shiva Nikiyam. Perish, Yamim Shayiyu Nikiyam Lagamri Mikol Siyag Tuma. There are things, there are certain particular details, we're not going to discuss details, but there are certain types of stains that may not make a woman into a Nidar, to a Zava, but if she's already counting Shiva Nikiyam, then that can mess up the count. Because at that stage, when there's already a move toward complete purity, even the smallest thing that wouldn't normally create Tuma. But if we're trying to be perfect, we're trying to be recovering and moving toward a sense of tahara, then at that stage, anything small can mess up the count. The idea that it has to be 7 clean days isn't about one day here, one day there. It has to be 7 consecutive days. And if unfortunately on day number 6 something is not right, you have to start all over again. One little impurity can mess up the entire count, can make the person have to start all over again. Rach, kach efshe letzpos lebinyan chazak v'shaleim chel ruchnias mutzekes. In order to properly have tahara, you have to be able to create with consecutive progress and also with watching out for any little things that come up. Let's make this more clear. In other words, to give an analogy, we've done a lot of brain studies about people who have addictions. Our studies show that one drink is not going to make someone into an addict. We've done brain imaging to see there are irregularities in the centers of the brain relating to pleasure-seeking, decision-making, empathy, abilities to be outside oneself, executive functioning. Those are damaged, or they're not functioning at their highest level when someone is an addict. People debate, is it because they have a brain irregularity that they tend to become addicted to drinks? Or is it from drinking that their brain is actually damaged? The answer is yes. There's obviously two sides, and they're both true, that there's some kind of biological predisposition for addiction, and there's also the behaviors actually change brain chemistry. That we can then see the brains, the MRIs, and the functional MRIs of people's brains, we can see the centers of the brains that are affected by addiction. So a person's brain may not be affected by one drink. One drink is not going to upend the cycle. But if a person's a recovering alcoholic who struggled with alcoholism for decades, and now they're in the process of recovering from alcoholism, for that person, one drink could be the be-all and the end-all of their progress. What's the difference? Why does one drink mess up this person but not the first person? Because for a person who's currently in a good state, one drink is not going to throw them off the edge, is not going to make them into an alcoholic. But a person who's trying to overcome some state of tumah, a person who's trying to overcome some state of defection, some kind of state of being far from their values, in the process of recovery, even if a person slips one time, it messes up all the previous work. And it doesn't matter if they've been clean for 1 day or 6 weeks or 6 months or 6 years, that one drink for a recovering alcoholic can totally buck the entire cycle, can totally upend and erase all their previous progress. And that's the halacha for Shiva Nikiyam. Some of the types of blood that wouldn't make a woman tamea, from the outset, if she's already in the process of becoming clean during the Shiva Nikiyam, then even the smallest thing can mess up the cycle. Because in the process of purity, there's a higher standard. And the damage to one who's trying to buck a trend, who's trying to reverse a habit, it's much more dangerous. And for the Klal Yisrael, for this version, we're going to apply that right now. So what does that mean for us when it comes to Sfiras HaOmer? And that's the next paragraph. V'chein b'geulas Mitzrayim, she'inyana hi hayetzia merishus acheres l'rishus social HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Our idea of leaving Mitzrayim was to not only get out of there, to stop being tortured, but it was from living in Galus, living away from Hashem, no longer in his embrace, in his warm, intimate company. And we're trying to come back to that. We're trying to become close to Hashem again. We're trying to form that intimate union once more. We're not just starting with a blank slate. We're suffering from a terrible spiritual illness, suffering from tumah, suffering from the depths of 49 levels of impurity. For us to come back, we have to count Shiva Nikiyam. We have to count the national version, 7 times 7, 7 weeks of purity. We have to look inside, just like a woman does bedikos inside. We have to look inside. We have to look deep inside ourselves, and we have to ask ourselves, what imperfections do we still have that are preventing us from coming close to Hashem? What technology addictions? What work addictions? I'm using the word addiction here more lightly than we used it in the previous discussion. But sometimes things get in the way. We're busy. We're distracted. We're angry and we're irritable. These are things that get in the way of us truly being makabel the Torah. And this is the time period. Shavuos cannot be arrived at without first going through the Shiva Nikiyam, without going through the process of looking internally and saying, is there any imperfection? Is there anything that's going to get in the way? And during this special time period, even things that wouldn't normally throw us off, but during this time, they can mess us up. That's what he writes. V'zemarumaz v'amruchaz v'amruzal v'safra lo li'atzma. The woman who's counting, the Zava who's counting, counts for herself. It's up to her. She is the one who has to check herself. It has to be a real introspection. We have to count for ourselves. And the Torah refers to this very often as a Shabbos. Mimacharas HaShabbos, Mimacharas HaShabbos. And Chazal are bothered by this word, Shabbos. We don't start counting Sfira after Shabbos. You know, the Tzdukim, this is a big fight between the Tzdukim and those who followed the Torah Shebaal Peh for many, many, many years. But what does it mean to start counting Sfira Mimacharas HaShabbos? The Tzdukim always used to start counting Sfira on a Sunday. Sunday meaning the day after Sabbath. We know that Mimacharas HaShabbos means the day after Yantiv, means the day after Pesach. On the second night of Pesach, we start counting. So why does the Torah use the word Shabbos if it doesn't mean Shabbos? So if you look at the second page, on page 25, Radassa writes where it's underlined, Aval Barasha Torah Miramezas Lazeh, Latochana Inyan, Umila Shabbos Miramezas Al Hashbasas Hatuma. The word Shabbos, aside from meaning Yantiv in this context, perhaps he argues, he suggests, the word Shabbos is used because Shabbos implies cessation, a complete nullification, a complete eradication of any sort of Tumah at all. That's what Sefirah is going to be about. Just like the Zava has to count clean days that are totally clean, we, the national version, we, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's bride, have to make sure we are truly making ourselves clean. And we're going to get more practical as the discussion goes on. But just to set the stage, point number one is that we are in a national version of Shiva Nikiyam at this time. Sefiras HaOmer, the 7 times 7, is the larger scale, the macro version of what it means to prepare oneself and the things that wouldn't normally throw us off. During this time of purity, we have to be extra sensitive and extra careful. Rav then connects us to the carbon that's brought on Shavuos and what that symbolizes. The carbon on Pesach is the carbon Omer. We call it Sfiras HaOmer. We count from the Omer. And we go all the way till Shavuos and we offer a carbon Shtei Alechem, which is the second paragraph in the next section, the last paragraph on the page. He writes, together Shtei Alechem Shetzivsa Torah Lahavi B'chaga Shavuos Hu asagas madregas kabbalas haTorah. On Shavuos, there is a wheat offering that's brought into, made into two different breads, and the Torah calls it mincha chadasha, a brand new offering. He writes, the simple understanding of that, Mincha Chadasha, is because that is the first grain offering offered of the year. On Pesach, Chadash becomes allowed, the new grain is allowed once the Karban Omer is brought on Pesach. But in order to bring the new grain as a Karban in the Beis HaMikdash, the first Karban is the Shtei HaLechem. So on a simple level, Mincha Chadasha, it's the new crop. But on a deeper level, he writes something very, very, very special. Why is the Karban on Shavuos called the new Karban, the new offering? He writes, Al Kenikru Mincha Chadasha, Ki Kol Hasaga B'chol Madrega Ki Chadasha L'Gamri. We have to see ourselves at every step that we take in this process of purity as a new step. Olam Acher Mamish. It's a totally different world, a totally different stage of purity, a totally different stage of accomplishment. Klapi HaMadrega Shlamata Mimena. 34 is not the same as 33, which is not the same as 32, 31. Every day we're building up. Many have asked, why don't we count down to Shavuos? Like we count down to the end of the school year. I'm talking about teachers, obviously, counting down to the end of the school year. Can't wait to be done. So how come we don't count down to Shavuos? One idea is we're counting up. We're building ourselves up. Every day it's a Mincha Chadasha. We're building toward the ultimate Mincha Chadasha because every day is a new Avodas Hashem. Now over here, he writes something that I think is very beautiful in terms of our connection to addiction. We talked before about during this process of purity, during the process of recovering from a distance. When Klal Yisrael were in Mitzrayim, we had the sense of distance from Hashem. We were distant physically. We weren't in our homeland in Eretz Yisrael. We were distant spiritually. We weren't keeping many mitzvahs. We retained our identity with our clothing and our names and our language, but we weren't necessarily keeping a lot of mitzvahs. It's a big distance between us and our chassid. It's a lot of tumah there. When Chazal talk about the 49th level of tumah, where did they get that number from? The number is the number of Sfiras HaOmer. They understood the connection between Sfiras HaOmer being about building one on top of the other, building 49 days of purity to counteract 49 different levels of sinking far from Hashem. And it's a very daunting process if you think about it. We just described this idea that even one drop of blood could erase all the 7 clean days. At the end of day number 6 or at the end of day number 7, a slight impurity of one drink can mess up the addict's progress. That's very scary. It's very overwhelming. How are we supposed to keep that in mind? How are we supposed to remain focused on our goal when it seems so far away? The perfection demanded of us as we're trying to come closer back from the 49th, the 48th, the 47th level. How are we supposed to do that? And what he's talking about now, with this Mincha Chadasha of each day being a new world, is actually very reminiscent of an idea discussed in great length in the world of addiction recovery. That's the idea of one day at a time. You've heard this before? This is a common mantra that's used in addiction recovery. One day at a time. One day at a time. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous, AA, was founded, its roots can be traced back to 1935. There was a meeting between two people whose both their names were Bob, okay, that's interesting, and they had a meeting together, and that was the forerunner of what eventually became Alcoholics Anonymous, one of the greatest, are we frozen on Zoom? No. One of the most successful programs for addiction recovery. These 12-step programs have been expanded not only for alcohol, but for gambling, for all types of different struggles people are going through. This whole 12-step process begins with understanding it's one day at a time. And I'll read to you a quote from the AA guidebook, which is called Living Sober. And they write it like this. Quote, although we realize that alcoholism is a permanent, irreversible condition, our experience has taught us to make no long-term promises about staying sober. We have found it more realistic and more successful to say, I am not taking a drink just for today. Even if we drank yesterday, we could plan not to drink today. We might drink tomorrow, but who knows whether we'll even be alive then. But for these next 24 hours, we decide and commit not to drink. No matter what the temptation or provocation, we determine to go to any extremes necessary to avoid a drink today. One day at a time. One day at a time. Just one day at a time. Whatever yesterday was, some people in AA, or they have these little badges that they carry around, 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, 3 years, 20 years. Again, studies show, even if you're 20 years down the line of progress, one drink can mess you up. And there are many addicts still 20 years in who say, I'm not going to drink today. What do you mean? You've done 20 years. Shouldn't you be looking at the next 20 years? One day at a time. Progress is hard. To look at 49 days and say, I have to be perfect. Because we're coming from such tumah, we have to be perfect. How are you supposed to be perfect? And so we only count one day at a time. It's hard enough to remember to count Sphira once a day. Imagine counting more than one day at a time. No, we only count one day at a time. We count one day at a time. Which is not just a lesson in terms of the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer, but of the lesson of Sfiras HaOmer. If we're going to march toward purity, if we're going to march toward that ultimate, intimate embrace with the divine, with the wedding, the heavenly wedding on Shavuos, to get there, we have to climb, count up, day by day. In 2020, there was a study done at Yale where they actually used brain imaging to confirm the benefits of doing one day at a time. With a lot of brain parts that I don't really understand, so I'm not going to speak words that I don't understand. But essentially, in a nutshell, what they found was that there was a disruption in a part of the brain connecting to the prefrontal cortex, which is about decision-making and properly planning and delaying gratification and making decisions that are values-based and not falling prey to temptation. That area was disrupted in people who had been suffering from addiction. They had a hard time delaying gratification, making values-based decisions, and that's why they sometimes have a hard time keeping a job, meeting demands of their family. And people say, how could you do that to me? You don't love me, you don't care about me. It's a big challenge for the family as well, obviously. And at the same time, it's something that's really challenging when a person's brain is having a disruption in the area that allows them to make proper values-based decisions. And what they found was that people who had stopped drinking, alcoholics who had stopped drinking about 1 week, 2 weeks ago, had a very major disruption in that center of the brain that was responsible for making good decisions. And therefore, the people still have very strong urges 1 or 2 weeks into their attempts to become sober, and it's very, very much disrupted, and you can see why they're having a hard time sticking to their values. They write, this is a study from Yale, the more recent the last drink, the more severe the disruption, and the more likely the alcoholics will resume heavy drinking and jeopardize their treatment and recovery. However, the researchers also found that the severity of disruption between these brain regions diminishes gradually the longer the subject abstains from alcohol. They did brain studies, brain scans, every single day. And one day at a time, each day, the disruption got weaker. The brain showed improved ability to heal itself and show progress and have the urges, which we see in front of us, the urges reducing one day at a time. From 2 weeks to 2 weeks in one day, 2 weeks in 2 days. Hey, that sounds familiar. That's how we count the Omer. 2 weeks, 2 weeks in one day, 2 weeks in 2 days. Why don't we do it like that? We should just count weeks. No, we don't count just weeks. One day at a time. Just take it one day at a time. Count one day at a time. And every so often, we mark our progress. We get a little badge. 1 week. 6 days, 7 days. We got a week. And then, 1 week in one day. 1 week in 2 days. 1 week in 6 days, 2 weeks. Another badge. 2 weeks. We get it. Another milestone. One day at a time. 5 weeks left? How are we going? One day at a time. 2 weeks in one day. 2 weeks in 2 days. 3 weeks? Another badge for us. What's next? 3 weeks in one day. It's one day at a time. One day at a time. It's not just the ancient tumah of the generation that left Mitzrayim. The Archaim told us that we are all going through the same thing every single day. Every single year, I should say. Every single year, we're going through the same process. In our own personal journeys of returning to Hashem, our own personal journeys of being makabel the Torah ba'ahava on Shavuos, and as a tzibur, and as a nation, we're all working to come back to Hashem. It's been a year since the last Shavuos. We've all faltered in our promises and our adherence to the Torah a little bit. Great, it's time to come back. But because the tumah is so strong, these are shiva nekiyim, there can't be any imperfection. Well, that's really overwhelming. One day at a time. Just one day at a time. Mincha chadasha, the culmination of this process on Shavuos, has a mincha chadasha to indicate today's a new day. Today's a new world. That's how Rav Dessler phrased it. Today's a new world. The carbon represents our growth. It's going to come when we have the ability to stop and recognize each day is a new world. As the AA manual said, whatever happened yesterday doesn't make a difference. Tomorrow, who knows if we'll live that long. We're just focusing on today. Mincha chadasha. Today is going to be the beginning of a bright new future. Rabbi Abraham J. Twersky, Zatzal, the great rabbi and psychiatrist who actually focused and specialized in areas of addiction, he writes that this is not just a lesson for those who are struggling with clinical addiction. He writes, anyone who's struggling with any type of goal, any type of goal to progress in something or to overcome a challenge, I'm being vague so everyone can think of particular examples. I'm sure everyone has something to think about, goals we'd like to see. They're overwhelming and they seem impossible when we look at the goal with a zoomed out lens. His example is that when Yaakov Avinu was working hard for Rachel, in Parshas Vayetze, Yaakov loves Rachel very much. For some reason, his first offer is 7 years. I would have first offered like 5 minutes, 2 weeks, 30 days. Okay, fine, a year. But Yaakov starts with 7 years. Laban says, you drive a hard bargain. Okay, 7 years. And the Pasuk describes Yaakov working for those 7 years. The Pasuk describes that they appeared in Yaakov's eyes like yamim achadim, individual days, because of his great love for her. Now that is very hard to understand. We would have phrased it as, because of his great love for her, each day felt like torture. Yaakov was working day after day after day, and weeks and months and years, and 5 years and 6 years, Yaakov was falling apart. What does the pasuk mean? The days went by like the years went by like days because of his love for her? Wouldn't his love for her make the years go by like centuries? Rabbi Twersky pointed out something so beautiful. The pasuk may not be saying that Yaakov found it easy, like a couple of days. It's saying, how did Yaakov make it through 7 years? He took it day at a time. The 7 days appeared to him like individual days, because he broke down 7 years into one day, day two, day three, 1 week, a month and 1 day, a month and 2 days, 6 months. Here's my badge, 6 months and 1 day. And that's how Yaakov made it through that difficult challenge. Addiction or not, just any large goal that seems insurmountable. Break it down 1 day at a time. 1 day at a time. I'm going to pause here for thoughts, reflections. What do we got? What do you think of this idea? Sirius Omer, 1 day at a time. Yes.
What I was thinking of is you're pretty much putting the point right on in the fact that as opposed to counting down, it's much better to count up. And the fact that if you climb to say that, you know, that you're only 1 week into it, all of a sudden you say, oh, there's only 43 days left to go or 42 days left to go. It sounds overwhelming. But I guess if you just do it the other way, you just count today as this day of the Omer, you know, which gives you a regular count, it's the 1 day at a time. Just in the fact that it may be overwhelming for a person to say, oh my God, 40 more days, I have to remember to count every single day, and God forbid I forget one day. So I think you're perfecting that point in terms of counting up as opposed to counting.
Yeah, I'll repeat it for those on Zoom. The Sefer Achinuch, which you're referring to, who writes, the reason we don't count down is because it's overwhelming. It's depressing when a person sees 48 days left, 47 days left. It's very overwhelming. Additionally, it also makes a person feel like they're accomplishing. Days left implies that any days between now and then are meaningless. Well, that's impossible. Between me and my goal, there's all these meaningless days that are just getting crossed off. When we count up, we are tracking our progress. It's 7 days clean. Not 20 years left until I finally die of natural causes, no longer have to fight this fight. It's another day clean. And if I get stuck and mess up at 13, then that's what I got. I got 13. I'll start again, and maybe I'll get 15 next time. And maybe I'll get 16 the time after that. The progress isn't lost when you count up.
They had a lot of resets. In Israel, from the 7 weeks from the Mitzrayim to Har Sinai, they were constantly resetting their clocks. Mm-hmm. They had mara, they had complaints about the food. I mean, they had everything, and they constantly reset. It's not that they lost everything; they constantly started again. So I'm not sure it was a complete 7 weeks of going up and up and up. They had their little setbacks all the time.
That's a great point, and I'll repeat it for those who weren't able to hear on Zoom, that Bnei Yisrael did sin in Parshas B'Shalach several times, complaining about the lack of water, and about the lack of, they didn't follow the rules for the man.
Bitter water,
right? They don't follow the rules for the man, and there's a lot of things that they did wrong, and yet somehow they don't start again from zero. Somehow that's part of the building process, is to be able to pick up and say we can still count. Maybe they didn't get the full 49 days in that perfect way in that sense, but in some way they learn from their mistakes and were able to bounce back. And that's right. That's to show that it's okay to make mistakes. That'll take us to our second point for tonight. But I think Ilan unmuted.
Yeah, I have a question with respect to the paradigm of Tumah First of all, if the whole idea behind it was that the nation as a whole, putting aside the concept of Tuma Hutra Betzibur, but putting that aside, if the nation as a whole was supposed to ultimately undergo a Tahara process, why didn't Hashem give a mitzvah of Zayin Nikiyim before Har Sinai, instead only gave Shloshim Yemei Hagbalah?
That's a good question. I think that the parallel that Zohar and Rav Dessler are making over here is not that it was a literal Shiva Nikiyim for the areas of Tashrish Hamita. I think it's the process of believing in Hashem and the mun and anything that built faith in Hashem. I don't know if he's saying that the parallel was specifically in the areas of Bedika and areas specifically of family purity. I think he's saying that there's some form of national version of purifying whatever was the tumma of Mitzrayim. If Mitzrayim's tumma had to do with losing faith in Hashem, then any process like the miracles of Kriyas Yamsuf, which took place during these 49 days, and about the mun, and about the war against Amalek, and coming to Har Sinai and gathering around, I think those would be the acts of purity, rather than anything literally related to relations.
But then why tie it to seven?
The idea is that, just like we see in the husband-wife relationship, there's a number seven that has to do with perfecting the relationship, which in this case has to do with areas of intercourse and that particular domain. So too, when it comes to our general relationship with Hashem, our intimacy with Hashem is our emunah and our ability to cling to Him and have a relationship with Him. So in those particular areas of devekus, that's the areas that require purity. So anything that increased our trust in Hashem, getting Shabbos at Mara, Kibbut Avayim, which is a paradigm for our connection with Hashem, anything along those lines, those would be the Hashem B'nai Yisrael version of Shiva Nikiyim, and then the number seven is the 7 weeks.
And why then weren't B'nai Yisrael also given the mitzvah to count on the first time in Matan Torah and only afterwards in Emor?
That's a good question, right? Did B'nai Yisrael count Sfiras HaOmer the first year? That's a good question. I don't have an answer to that question.
It doesn't seem that they did, in terms of the way that it's set out. The mitzvah is clearly given in Sefer Vayikra after the after Shemini.
That's a very good point. I got to think about that more. Sichani has a hand raised.
Yeah, just to, in reference to the number seven. The number seven is always the completion, the renewal from the creation of the world on. So to have this, it's a renewed relationship in the marriage. It's a renewed relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the seven keeps coming through, however you want to work it. Maybe one day at a time. Hashem created the world one day at a time too. It was completed at the end of the 7 days.
That's true. Seven certainly has to do with the idea of Teva, the idea of a natural form of building and growth and creation, and definitely creating anew. A lot of periods of seven have to do with a rebirth or a restarting of that process. It's a very, very good point. Okay, so let's take a look at the second essay, which is the few minutes we have left, and tie it into Lag BaOmer. Where it comes to Lag BaOmer is a point that we're already hinting at. Mr. Kaplan hinted at this, and that's that sometimes we fall short. Yeah, this idea that we're setting up for ourselves. Shiva Nikiyim is reminiscent of the idea of absolute purity, of absolute consistency, of absolute, don't let any little nooks and crannies get in there. Because during this period of recovery from addiction, recovery from the farthest levels of tumma and separation, if in this period of purification, even the slightest thing can mess us up. The question is, well then, what happens if during this time period we do mess up? How are we supposed to have the courage to turn that around? And this is exactly the lesson of Lag BaOmer. We'll start this section. This is from volume 4 of Michtav Me'eliyahu. Notice the page numbers change radically, and that's okay. We're in a different volume right now, for those paying attention. Rav Dessler points out, where did this tumma even come from? Talk about tumma, memtes shari tumma. What does it mean, tumma? Let's get back to the basics. Where does tumma even come from? And he explains so beautifully here in this other essay. He writes, Tachlis kol davar hi liyos kli l'kedusha. Everything, every person, is intended, has the function of being a vehicle to be mekadesh shem shemayim. U'kesha adam mishtamish bo l'tachliso, hari hadavar ahu mis'alo mis'kadesh. When the person, him or herself, or whatever object, any animal, or a household item is used for avodas Hashem, the object, or the animal, or the person is elevated. But when potential is wasted, when a person's potential is wasted, when an animal's potential is wasted, tuma mispashetes alav. That's where tuma comes from. Tuma is the absence of life. Tuma is the absence of potential. The more the potential was, Hatuma Guru Yoser. The Tumah is worse based on what potential was not fulfilled. Hamesu Avi Avos Hatumah. A dead body in Halacha is the greatest, it's the paradigm of Tumah. Avi Avos Hatumah. The greatest opportunity in the universe is mankind. It's for a human being who has the potential, Leos Merkava l'neshama hakadosha, has the potential to give physical access for the neshama to do mitzvos in this world. Bezonis batla b'misaso. When a person passes away, rachmana litzlan, the absence of the neshama, the removal of that potential, is what creates tumah. Ume'enzo gam tumas hanida. Every type of tumah, and Rav Hirsch points this out, I think in Parshas Tazria, every type of tumah we can imagine in the world that the Torah teaches us about has to do with the loss of life or the loss of potential. Every time a woman experiences nida, it's the shedding of the uterine line, which was the potential to give life. It doesn't mean someone's doing something wrong, not having a new baby every single month, but just the potential for life was there, and in the absence, in the death of that potential, there is tumah. The loss of a life is the most obvious. An avela, an animal that is killed, that also has tumah, sheretz. Okay, we understand that. Tzaras, in some sense, is the loss of potential of good speech, and all that was lost by a person speaking lashon hara. The damage of potential good relationships that's damaged by lashon hara, that creates tumah as well. Every type of tumah has to do with the loss of potential. So why was there tumah on the Jewish people when they were in Mitzrayim? Erdesser explains, Yisrael begalus kevan she'ein zo tachlisam hem bebechinas tumah. When the Jewish nation is not in Eretz Yisrael, and they're in a foreign culture, and they're not doing mitzvot, and they're not davening to Hashem, and their emunah is shattered, there is tumah. There is a death of the ideal. There is the death of the potential to have a relationship with Hashem. There is separation of potential, and therefore there is tumah. That's why Bnei Yisrael had sunk so far. They had lost so much potential. Hazman Shabain Yitzias Mitzrayim Laboam El Midbar Sinai Bechodesh HaShlishi. The process from Yitzias Mitzrayim to arriving for Kabbalah Sat Torah, Hayazman HaChanul Matan Torah. And that's the idea of preparing ourselves, of ridding ourselves of that tumah, of reclaiming our potential. If tumah represents the loss of all the goodness we can strive for, whether it's being sober, or being our best work selves, or our best religious selves, or our best family selves, whatever is disrupted by our addictions, whatever relationships, human, divine, are interrupted by our falling short, that's tumah. Tumah is a term that means the potential for life and greatness and avodas Hashem is being disrupted. And Klal Yisrael and Mitzrayim for so many years had lost themselves, they had lost that potential, there was tumah. And the road back to Hashem is called tahara. That reclaiming, the reachieving of the potential is that opportunity. And with this, we get to Lag BaOmer, on the last page for tonight. Rav Dessler quotes from Rav Shlomo Alkabetz, who was the author of Lecha Dodi, about 500 years ago in Tzfat. He asked the question on the first line, Madua Mesu Talmidei Rabbi Akiva Dafka Bimei Asfira. The Gemara tells us that the reason there's a national version of Avelis during this time is because Rabbi Akiva lost 12,000 pairs of Talmidim who died between Pesach and Shavuos. Why did they die this time? Halo chetam, shelo nahagu kavod zebeza. They didn't respect each other. They created a terrible environment in the yeshiva. Well, vaday nimshach zman rav kodam lechein. Are we to believe they just started being mean to each other during Pesach to Shavuos, and they all started dying on the spot? They were probably not respecting each other for a time before that. So why did they specifically die during this time? And Shlomo Alkabetz answers, Biar huzal, shekol rav halomidim talmidim mashbiya lehem minishmasav. He writes that when a Rebbe teaches, when there's a transmission of the Mesorah, that is the greatest giving over of a person's essence, a person's life. Chazal even compare one's students to one's children, because there is a connection between the physical giving over to the next generation and the spiritual transmission of that Mesorah. And I'll explain the rest outside for time's sake. He writes that when the Talmidim had failed to produce that potential, the potential to gather together 24,000 of Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim, who could have banded together to create the greatest receptacle of Torah learning in that entire generation. And their infighting and their lack of kavod for each other created an environment in the yeshiva where they weren't learning from each other, and it interrupted their ability to learn from Rabbi Akiva. That created a major loss of potential. And when the time of Sfiras HaOmer came around, it wasn't that they began to mistreat each other during Sfiras HaOmer. It was, this is the time period where we're supposed to reclaim that potential. To accept the Torah, to reaffirm ourselves to Hashem, to rebuild that intimacy that comes with the Torah, our wedding gift, our act of Kiddushin, our act of Nisuin, coming into Hashem as Rishus. It was during this time period, where Shlomo Alkobetz answers, that they were judged harshly and put to death, Tuma, because it represented the loss of all that potential. The loss for Torah to be elevated was judged so much more harshly during this time, which is all about advancing ourselves one day at a time toward potential. They had blown the count. They had ruined the time period. And that's why it's a happy day today. But seriously, what? Lag BaOmer is a happy day? But what do we teach our kids in school? Why is it a happy day? Because they stopped dying. You know why they stopped dying? Because they were all dead. There were no more to be dead. If he had 24,001, they would have died for one more day. Wait, what exactly are we celebrating on Lag BaOmer? They stopped dying because they were wiped out. I see Nancy is already indicating. The Brich Hadash 400 years ago points out the answer to this question is the Gemara's continuation. Rabbi Akiva looked around and he saw the great loss of potential. The Tumah everywhere, the Count of Sfiras HaOmer decimated, the Shivan Akiyam ruined, the Tumah had returned. And you know what he did? He picked himself up and he found 5 new Talmidim. Now, in the aftermath of 24,000, which is a staggering, unthinkable number, 24,000 just doesn't make any sense. He went down to 5. Plenty of empty seats. No one was fighting anymore. They had plenty of sfarim for everybody. 5 Talmidim. You know how depressing that is? What a loss that is? All the numbers you built up to 24,000 and you're back to square zero? And what did Rabbi Akiva do? On Lag BaOmer, he picked himself up and he said, one day at a time. One day at a time. One Talmud at a time. Who were these Talmudim? Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yossi, Rishon Ben Yochai. Those weren't just 5 random people. These are all the Gedolim of the Mishnayos period who all had one student in common, whose name was Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. He learned by these 5 students, Rabbi Akiva. What an impact he made. Known as Rebbe, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi is called Rebbe. Rebbe compiled the Mishnayos that was taught through his 5 teachers, who themselves were the 5 students of Rabbi Akiva, who picked himself up, dusted himself off, and recovered from the setback of the number of 24,000. If Sfiras HaOmer represents marching toward our goals, elevating ourselves, Lag BaOmer is the perfect point for us to stop and say, and if we fail, and if we go back to zero, let's start again. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Whether it's Talmidim, whether it's days in the calendar, whether it's committing ourselves in our personal habits, in our midos, whatever it is, whatever we feel we need to do to perfect ourselves, to make ourselves closer to Hashem, this time is for that. These Shiva Nikiyam, these national 7 weeks of 7 days, are to give us nationally, but also for us each to ask ourselves individually, what is it I can do to remove the tumma, that loss of potential, whatever it is I could be at that I haven't been achieving, that's tumma. I can come back from that loss of potential by building myself closer to Hashem in my davening, in my learning, in my chesed, in my interpersonal relationships, in my families, in my workspaces, reaching out to people who need help and support, just showing people I care. Whatever it is currently creating that tumma, that loss of potential, we can reclaim it. All the sefirah is about that. Lag BaOmer specifically is about that. Rabbi Akiva taught us you can go all the way down from 24,000 to zero and pick yourself up and start with 5. And all of Torah Shabbat Peh came through those 5 because he didn't give up. The power of 1, the power of 5, power of 49, the power of whatever 15, whatever so days are left. One day at a time. One day at a time. Growing, elevating, marching ourselves to Kabbalah Satara. So to summarize for tonight, this is what we're focusing on. In Sfira in general, but on Lag BaOmer specifically. To be extra careful at this time, to recognize that the powers of Tuma, in terms of how we treat each other, the Sinas Chinam that's rampant, this is the time where we can't even tolerate even the smallest speck. The one drink can mess us up. The potential could be lost so easily during this time of purity. And if it seems overwhelming to have to face this giant number, this giant goal, one day at a time, whether it's clinical addiction, other goals that seem overwhelming, just break it down. Like we said, count up. Track your progress. And if we do falter, because we all do, when we falter, pick ourselves up. Lag BaOmer is that point that really does feel like Shavuos is around the corner. Because Lag BaOmer is that last march of, okay, you know what? Whatever happened before, tonight, one, two. Let's keep going. Let's keep elevating ourselves. Here at Hashem, if we keep this attitude of Lag BaOmer and this empowerment of Lag BaOmer to continue making our way through the rest of the Shiva Nikiyam all the way to Kabbalah HaTorah and our wonderful Chasana with the Kadosh Baruch Hu.